thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Actually,
here's John Williams.
Does a big thought include, I'm a little confused here? That's at least an honest thought. We'll get to that in just a second. How are you? And welcome to the John Williams Show. We're here almost until 3 o'clock in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Come on down, wave hello, say hi. And we'll say hi back. You can do that, of course, via text and telephone, too. The text and phone number are 312-981-7200. Yeah, 312-981-7200 if you want to be part of our little program here. A friend of mine has taken to saying of late, whenever I say or she hears something unusual about what's happening with the Trump administration, Washington, D.C., politics in America these days, you elect a clown, you get a circus. Steve, that's my new bumper sticker. You elect a clown, you get a circus. Although I did see a bumper sticker heading down, I think, Clark the other day. And I hadn't seen this one before. I don't know if this is something you make or if this is something you buy, but it was just a black background and white letters, or white background and black letters. And it simply said, I did not vote for him. That was the bumper sticker. I like you elect a clown, you get a circus, because that sort of spreads the blame around, too. I am not mad at the people who voted for Donald Trump, because I don't think if you did, you could have known either. So some of us didn't vote for the president, and that's all right, the same way it is yours to vote for him. Congratulations, your guy won. If you didn't vote for the president, you probably are still shocked and dismayed at what's been happening lately.
I can see why you wouldn't be mad at someone. I mean, they exercised their judgment.
And they didn't know what was going to happen.
How could they not know he's behaving exactly the way he campaigned?
I think even I thought that he'd settle in. The Gower, Rex Tillersons, and Mike Pences of the world, the Reince Priebuses would corral him, and they'd say, okay, that worked. Now we're going to run the show, or you're going to run it differently. I honestly believe that. And even if, Steve, he continued to govern the way he campaigned, it would not be as crazy as this is. This is nuttier.
So it'd be like marrying a guy thinking he was going to change after the wedding.
Some women do that.
Yeah.
Particularly since, okay, maybe they should have known. You're suggesting they should have known better.
I'm just saying it would be different if he did a 180 from the way he campaigned, and then you could say, how could you have ever known? But he's behaving exactly the way he campaigned. So if you were going to put any stock in anything, you probably should have suspected, right? I mean,
all I know is I'll bet there are people out there. I know there are people out there who voted for him, and they're shaking their head, too. Not the way I am, maybe not as diligently or at everything. For instance, they'll say, yeah, well, what about Hillary, or what about CNN, or what about Barack Obama and the Boy Scouts? I mean, they'll have those whatabouts that don't concern me so much. But at the end of the day, they're like, yeah, but this is crazy. I can't believe he said, did, tweeted that. Even they are doing that. And I'm either trying to court them, Steve, or maybe I'm too empathetic. I am a middle child. But I think if you came up to me and said, I voted for him, John, I didn't know. I would just pat you on the back and say, I know I didn't either. I didn't either. You didn't know. I didn't know. You wanted health care reform and a tax bill. And I didn't want him at all. Neither of us have what we want.
Okay, I can see that individually. If someone came up to me and said that, I didn't expect this.
I thought I'd get tax reform. I thought I'd get a new health care bill. I thought I'd get, I don't know, a wall.
But you whatever. See my point, too.
Yeah, I guess so, but I really think that...
How could you not? It's perfectly clear.
Because I don't think you can ever know how. You cannot anti... George Bush said, read my lips, no new taxes.
Right.
They raised taxes!
Okay, that's my point. We've talked about this on the Mincing Rascals. He might be... Every opponent in a campaign tries to define their opponent, right? So crooked Hillary was defined by Donald Trump. Trump was defined by Hillary as not up to the job, not able. And her... I want to say this carefully, but the criticisms of him are being seen now, I think. I think the way he was defined wasn't inaccurate in the way that, as we've talked about, maybe Mitt Romney was defined as an uncaring rich guy. That probably wasn't true, but that's how the Democrats tried to define him.
I don't think the Clintons are serial murderers, but they were defined that way.
Right.
But you're saying that everything that we warned you about Donald Trump is, in fact, coming to fruition.
I'm just saying it'd be one thing to say I didn't expect this if the guy had if he changed his behavior. He hasn't changed it.
He has changed his behavior.
So you're saying he's behaving in a different way than he campaigned?
Almost. Here's what I'm saying. That I think that a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump liked what they saw in the campaign trail, and they're getting an even more petulant child. It's even worse. That's what I've been saying. It's worse than we thought it was going to be.
He gave out Lindsey Graham's cell phone number during the campaign because he didn't like what he said about him.
He said that who was the senator that everybody hated on the campaign trail?
Ted Cruz.
He said that Ted Cruz's dad had something to do with the Kennedy assassination.
He met with Oswald before the assassination.
He implicated Ted Cruz's dad in the Kennedy assassination during the campaign.
Yeah, I think you'd be hard-pressed to make a case that he's behaving.
Yeah, I don't think I'm making it well now that I'm talking to you.
So my point is, I understand if a voter comes up and says, you know what, I got it wrong. I really expected him to do something like this differently. You know, I was wrong, but I think the voters have to carry some responsibility for it. He hasn't changed.
Okay. Let me just ask you, do you suppose that a person who did not want Donald Trump to be president is also shocked at the level to which he has gone? Do you think that they are surprised?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
okay, but then why can't you grant that to people who did vote for him, hoping for a modicum of civility and maturity? I mean, you know, for each group, he's wobbled to the crazier side.
You're right.
And I think those people get that the same way you and I might, or somebody else who voted for Hillary or Bernie or didn't vote for Trump.
Okay.
So here's the number, 312-981-7200. And so why do I even begin the show on that? Well, because when I got up this morning, even before Bingo started barking for his morning constitution and then his breakfast, I looked on the Twitter. And the president never disappoints. Every morning he leaves a little Christmas package there for you, doesn't he? In fact, at the rally in Ohio and at the Boy Scout Jamboree 2 days ago, rally last night, he's promised that we're all going to start saying Merry Christmas. I didn't know that we stopped. I'm not entirely comfortable with the president of the United States saying that we should invoke a Christian salutation during the holidays. I like Merry Christmas, too. I'm a little passive-aggressive. I sometimes lob it out there like, Merry Christmas. Oh, what are you going to do, stop me? Which is a real fun way to celebrate the holidays. But it's weird to see the president championing that for a variety of reasons. Church and state, if you want to get big, or it's so flippin' trivial if you want to get small. And by the way, we weren't talking about that. And incidentally, it was 106 in Peoria 2 days ago. Or the heat index was about 108 in Peoria recently. So it's not even on our mind. I just want to hit a couple of the tweets before we get to the LGBTQ, the transgender and the military issue. But the president did do this. This is what the president wants you to know. He has been talking to you for the last 12 hours, and in the last 7, he has tweeted the following. Senator Lisa Murkowski of the great state of Alaska really let the Republicans and our country down yesterday. Too bad. And then he tweeted this, and this one was especially strange, not just for what he said, but you know what struck me about this one was the way he said it. After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous medical costs and disruption that transgender in the military would entail. Thank you. I love the thank you at the end. Usually it's like forward, march, on, sad, good, big. But just a little, oh, by the way, thank you. And then he shuts the door quietly and tippy-toes out. By the way, the 7,000 of you who are here and are already serving our country and putting yourself in harm's way and are transgender and are eligible for benefits, not so much anymore. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye. Thank you very much. And then off he goes. So somebody probably in an administrative position at the Pentagon went, okay, now we got to figure that out. So now what do we do? What? Bob, did you see the tweet from the president? So now we got to do the thing where they're not here anymore.
Did you see his most recent one 55 minutes ago?
In America?
Yeah, okay.
Well, so this is more to the church-state thing. But this comes from, in fact, we have the soundbite, Elif, of the president. Hey, Elif, do we have the soundbite of the president at the Ohio rally where he mentioned God, worship, and government? Do you have that soundbite for us? Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay, let me know when you're ready to play it. You got it? Go.
In America, we don't worship government. We worship God.
It's part of a longer paragraph, but it was all about that, that we don't worship rules and regulations. It's not about policymakers. It's about, well, and then he said it, we worship God. A lot of us do. God is awesome. And probably Muslims worship God and Jews worship God and Christians worship God, but we call them different things and we imagine it differently.
It's probably the most Reagan-esque thing he said, though.
Reagan-esque.
Reagan, Ronald Reagan could have said that or might have said that.
Did Ronald Reagan say that?
I could see
Ronald Reagan. Oh, my God, it just sounded like Rokan. Did Ronald Reagan say that?
I could see President Reagan saying that.
I can see Rokan saying that.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's just back off for a second, as you say, and just step back and see what we got here. So at a rally, the president said, in America, we don't worship government, we worship God. First of all, not everybody does. You've got atheists, and you've got some people who, in fact, don't define the thing they worship as God. And maybe they are a different religion. Maybe they're theistic or something, but not everybody worships God. But I'm not uncomfortable with a candidate saying that. I mean, I can see how that works. Preachers ran for president. So, of course, there's a Christian base and a conservative base, and maybe that's just your own natural beliefs. But I can't think of the president who didn't go to church and make a show of it. I get it. But once you become president, that's not only not necessary, it's pretty much not appropriate. There is a church and state separation. If the president, the constitutional leader of this country, says, we worship God, what does that mean to you if you don't? Or what if it means if you don't worship a Christian God? That's just a wrong-headed sentence for, I think, a sitting president to say, unless it's Christmas or unless he's on the campaign trail. But he threw out that LGBTQ transgender thing, and I want to get into that here in just a second. Steve was holding in. Pardon me, Steve. If you want to join the conversation, we'll make room for you. In fact, we'd love it if you did. 312-981-7200. Steve, you are on WGN. Hi.
John, how are you, King? You know, I have such fear as an American of where, of the direction that we are going. You know, the comment of that we worship God, and I do. I believe in God. I have a very strong faith in God. But that does not make me any better than somebody who doesn't believe in God. I think with the LB, with the transgender announcement today, I'm waiting for this president to come out and say interracial marriages are illegal from now on. Because I think he's taken us back to the 1800s with all this type of theory that if you do not believe the way he believes, then you are wrong. And I believe that he is brainwashing these people who actually support him to believe the same thing. When I see people cheering for the things that he says, and they're okay with this hatred that's being spewed from the presidency, from a pulpit where he
should
be
think they are.
Bringing the country together.
I don't think they are.
I think they are allowing the hatred that's being spewed to show who they are as individuals as well.
I think here's what I hope is happening. Steve, you know, what do I know? You're probably right. But here's what I hope is happening. That it's like I said a moment ago. I don't blame the people that voted for Donald Trump for Donald Trump's behavior. And I think some of them are ducking their heads and wishing he hadn't said it, but they're not saying, they're not calling into shows like this and saying, I'm outraged too and I voted for him. And maybe you're right. At some point, it's incumbent upon them to say, no, Mr. President, that's not us. So if you're a Boy Scout and he mentions Barack Obama, you shouldn't boo and jeer. And if you voted for the president and he says something wildly inappropriate, you should call him out on that instead of saying, let's all rally around our president. I'm with you on that.
We have 50 senators yesterday who sat there and voted for health care the Republican way, but not one of those senators came out on the floor and said what the president said in front of thousands of children was inappropriate, was inexcusable, and was very unprofessional and wrong and perverted. He did not need to stand there and talk about some guy who was 80 years old and what he, the things that he experienced at his age because he had money, and lead in the direction he was leading towards sexual type of content.
There was innuendo in that thing. It was weird. I wonder if he did that. If he ran it by, he goes, okay, I got a great cocktail party joke or story. I'm going to tell it to the Boy Scouts. Where was Ivanka? Where was Ivanka going, Dad? That's not the right venue for that. It's going to be outdoors. The average age there is going to be about 15 and a half. Let's not go with the cocktail party story, okay? Let's do something about, I don't know, woodworking. Anything but that one, Dad. I appreciate your phone call, Steve. He's not been listening to his daughter much lately anyway. In June of this year, Ivanka tweeted, I am proud to support my LGBTQ friends and the LGBTQ Americans who have made immense contributions to our society and economy. That can be his daughter's view. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Is it lip service or is it something that you would actually fight for? But now here's her father saying that those people should not serve in our military. I'm not clear on how big of a deal this is, since I'm not sure that they are a big part of the military population. In principle, it matters. But is this actually a day-to-day real quandary for a lot of people? I'm not sure. So from the first episode of the first version of The Office, the British version, this conversation in part took place.
You're so clever. What am I thinking about now?
You're thinking, if I crash land in jungle, will I be able to eat my own shoes?
Nope, and you can't.
Right. What are you thinking, Gareth?
I was just wondering, will there ever be a boy born who can swim faster than a shark?
Well, maybe one was, and maybe his name is Michael Phelps. This is the way Discovery Channel promoted their Shark Week duel.
Phelps closes strong and maintains an average speed of about 5.9 miles per hour.
So one thing that Great White has in common with Michael, it doesn't like to lose either.
Okay, first of all, sharks don't even know they're in a race. A shark that doesn't like to lose is a shark that goes, huh, I really feel bad if I lose. Sharks don't think that way. Sharks think two things. They think food, not food. And that's all they do for a century. That's how sharks think. Food, not food. Food, not food. Every day, food, not food. That's all they got. Sharks don't think, oh boy, it'll sure be tough to go back to shark school on Monday if I lose to a 5-mile-an-hour human. That's not how sharks think. Sharks don't think. In fact, that assertion is fake news. It's news, but it's not a true thing. It's fake news. If you want to know what fake news is, and nobody really does, you now know what fake news is. That Michael Phelps is going to race a shark, or that the shark cares in the outcome. The funny thing is that CNN has on its page one today four stories highlighted about sports. CNN, ABC, all of them are doing this today. Sports Illustrated, Bleacher Report. And all of them are writing about the fallout from the contest between Michael Phelps and a great white shark. A lot of people wanted him in the water with the shark, no barrier, saying, ready, set, go. But then the shark, which thinks food, not food, Michael, kind of food. And then the shark would eat Michael Phelps. Now, if you thought that's what was going to happen, and you might, because I think there's a population of people out there that go, you know, Michael Phelps is dumb enough, I think he'll do that. They got Ryan Lochte to do color, and Lochte's going, dude, I'd jump in there too, man. I think I could take him. So you might actually think that Michael Phelps and Ryan Lochte are dumb enough to do that, but they're not. They're not. So they got a CGI thing, and the shark kind of meanders. The idea that in a 100-meter race, Michael Phelps only loses by 2 seconds is kind of preposterous, too. But it's a promo for a TV show. The real news about sharks this week is that the record-setting biggest Mako shark, a nearly 1,000-pounder, was caught by our guest, and his name is Dave Bender. Hey, Dave, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. How are you, Dave? Welcome to our show.
How are we doing today?
We're doing pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. A little overwhelmed, but I'm doing okay.
When did you catch this fish?
We hooked the fish about 11 p.m. Last Friday night.
Were you specifically fishing for shark or something else?
At that time, do you want the backstory?
I got time. Sure, go ahead.
Okay. We run a offshore tuna boat, a charter boat. So our trips, most of them are what's called overnighters. We leave on day one in the morning, and when we get to our destination, the canyon, in about 3.5 to 4 hours, we troll for tuna, marlin, mahi-mahi, whatever bites the line. In the evening, this time of year, we put out some shark rods, and we put out a swordfish rod. So we trolled all day till dark. We caught one 35-pound yellowfin tuna and released three other small ones. And I guess about a quarter to nine, 8:30, quarter to nine, we set up on the drift. The boat's no longer trolling. It's under just under float. And we put out the shark rods and a sword rod. And that's what we do at night.
What do you guess? Go ahead, keep going.
I guess about 11 o'clock, we got a bite. And obviously at that point, don't know what it is. The line was screaming. And we knew immediately, regardless of what it was a big fish. I started the engines. The other two lines that were in the water were cleared. That means that they were reeled in. And I positioned the boat so that the angler was at the stern. And the line was just peeling off. And we were about to get spooled. Spooled means basically losing all the line on the reel, getting down to the knot, and having the knot pop, and you basically lose everything, obviously including the fish. So I put the boat in reverse and began to back down on the fish. That went on for quite some time. I want to say maybe after about an hour of chasing and we were getting some line back, we got our first look at the fish. And it was absolutely the biggest thing I had ever seen. It was enormous. My first thoughts were that it was a great white and that, man, we're in trouble now because, you know, you're not supposed to catch them. Obviously, we would cut the line. But when we got a little closer, I could tell it was a mako. And the pursuit and the battle went on.
You're not supposed to catch great white sharks? Are they protected or something?
Obviously, you can't school a great white not to bite your line, but you're definitely not supposed to land them.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, they have to be released. They're protected.
Boy, you didn't. Well, God bless them. So then, but you go, no, wait, it's a mako, so we get to keep this thing. So then you,
absolutely.
You reel it in?
Yes.
Yeah. And then
they did their best. We had a six-man charter. They passed the rod like it was a bong pipe at a Hendrix concert. They couldn't handle it. This was actually their first time offshore.
Thinking about the Hendrix concert now. Hold on a second. So the guys all kind of lean over the side and hoist the shark in. Is that what you're saying?
No. They're on a rod and reel right now. We're not to that point yet. I haven't gotten to that point yet.
Okay.
We have not gaffed or secured the shark. He's still swimming.
Yeah.
At the point where we get to the end game, we get him very close, and the other captain, Kevin, grabs the leader with his hand with a glove on. And at that point, we put the shark out of his misery with a slug of a shotgun, and we gaff him. So now when that happens, we have a monster shark. We have no idea of the weight, but now we have a monster shark next to the boat, and we have to get him, somehow figure out a way to get him in the boat. On the rear of our boat, known as the transom, we have a tuna door. We open the tuna door, we attempt to pull him through, and we can only get him in up to his pectoral fins. We can't fit him through. His head is the size of a garbage can. And now we have seven guys, trying to pull a shark through the door, and we can't budge him.
So, then how'd you do?
We tried different positions. We tried many different things for over an hour and got him part of the way through, and we were able to turn him to get his fin up in the air to get one fin through. We sort of bent him a little bit. Long story short, probably an hour and a half, we got him in the boat.
Yeah.
And it was, we were overwhelmed at the size.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, so you, really, a guy's trying to hoist a 1,000-pound thing. You can't pull it up over the side. Goes in through the door. Did anybody think, I know, let's cut that fin off? Does it, you know, you just saw it right
that
off.
That was mentioned. The charter, the customer said to Kevin, let's take the tuna door off. Kevin looked at the guy and said, listen, Dave didn't hear that. That's not an option.
So anyway, you get it on the boat, and then you bring it back to shore.
Well, we get it on the boat. Everybody, the guys are spent. They're absolutely exhausted.
Yeah.
Truth be told, one of the guys hit his anabolic threshold. He was sick. And I looked down, and we were supposed to stay the next, you know, that next day, Saturday, till about midday. And I looked and said would be impossible, literally impossible for us to fish anymore.
Right.
And it was going to be 90 degrees. We've got to get in. You don't want this thing to spoil. So we took a slow ride home to Manasquan in the dark.
And it's nighttime when you catch it, but I guess you got some sort of floodlights. You were able to see what you got.
Oh, yeah, we have lights all around the boat. We have underwater lights. You can see very well.
So when you get it to shore then, they hoist it up on a crane and you weigh it. What did you think about that? What was that like?
Well, everybody, you know, Kevin asked me what I thought it weighed. I always underestimate. He always overestimates. I told him I thought maybe it was pushing 600. They use a block and tackle to get it out of the boat onto the scale. And they got it hoisted up, and the scale was a 600-pound scale, and it bottomed out. So I thought, oh, man, we're not going to get a weight on this. The owner of the marina, Hoffman's Marina in Brielle, said that he had another scale that went up to 1,000 pounds, and he would go get it. 10 minutes later, they came back with a nice digital scale, certified scale, rigged it up, put the shark on it, and it read 926 pounds.
How long was it?
12 feet.
Do you eat it, or do you carve it up for sandwiches? What happens to all that shark meat?
The fellas, the customers got every single bit. As Quinn said, the head, the tail, the whole damn thing. They took every bit of it.
Yeah.
That evening, I got a call from the boys that were on the boat. They said, we realized we didn't leave you any fish. We just staked out all the fish. Would you like some? I said that I didn't, but I was pretty sure Kevin did. Kevin met the guys halfway between the shore and where they live, and their entire families met him. They came in three cars. Hugging them the whole bit. They told them a story that when they got home to Bordentown, New Jersey, half the town was there. There's a marina in their town, and half the town helped them cut the fish up. And I think that this Friday they're having a big fish fry, and it was a pretty big deal for them. So there wasn't a morsel of the fish that got wasted.
Dave Bender's on the line. It was his boat on which this giant shark, the largest mako ever caught, was caught, 920-plus pounds. Is that the largest shark ever, or maybe there was a great white that was bigger than that once upon a time?
It's the largest shark ever caught in New Jersey. These makos, I believe the world record might be 1,300 pounds, but it's the largest shark ever landed in New Jersey.
Do you feel bad for the shark? Like, how old is that shark? And it's this giant, magnificent machine of shark, and you're not interested in my take on that. What do you think of that? Do you feel bad for the shark?
I don't. It's what we do.
Yeah.
I will say, I'm getting some hate mail on social media.
Are you kidding me? From sharks?
Oh, absolutely.
From whom?
No, not from the sharks. Blue Planet Society, kinds of people.
Okay, all right, but then I guess they should be mad at you.
As far away as London.
Say it again?
As far away as London.
Hate mail, but I'll bet you, really. So you sounded exhausted, and I'm out of time now anyway, Dave. I'll let you go. But, I mean, so the world has beat a path to your door now, huh?
Well, I don't know about that. We were doing our job. We were very fortunate enough to be the ones that caught the shark.
Yeah.
It's a record, and we didn't do anything wrong.
Oh,
it's what we do.
I'm surprised. Listen, you know what? If you get up in the morning and say hello somebody on the internet is going to take exception to that. Don't listen, take it from a guy who talks on the radio 6 days a week. Don't let that get you down. Don't read that crap. It's you're fine.
I'm working on it.
You wanted to do a shout out to some folks in Chicago, did you? Who's that?
I coach women's softball at Lehigh University, and I have some New Trier alum there, Mark and Steph Covell and Kelsey Lee. I'd like to shout out to them, and I love them all.
Now, listen, let's visit again. Good luck to the ladies for the next season, and keep up the good work out there in New Jersey, all right?
Thank you very much.
That's Dave Bender. It was on his boat that the largest shark in New Jersey now was ever caught. I think if I go tuna fishing or shark fishing, I think I'm going to go with him.
Oftentimes you have a lot of...
Sarah Huckabee Sanders is at the White House press briefing today. It's underway. It's televised. She's been answering questions about the president's transgender tweet.
We have an outrageous deficit, and we're looking to make things that we have a balanced budget in the next...
She's talking about other things right now, but when asked, okay, does this include people that serve in the White House who are transgender? I don't know if they asked about members of Congress as well or their aides, but she said, no, this is just for people that are in the military. Major Garrett was just asking her, well, what happens to the people that are in the military now? What's the plan? And it sounds like they don't have one. Garrett said, well, then shouldn't you guys have figured out how you're going to reconcile that? She said the president felt once he'd made his decision, it was time to make the announcement. And so he did without what it sounds like a formal plan as to how to handle the 7,000 or so people who are already in that situation, what happens to them. Unless I'm misreading it, it sounds like they don't have an exact A to B on that yet. Hey, has your bank become excessive with their fees? Account fees, ATM fees, wire fees, teller fees, enough already. Here's a great way to offset a lot of those. Carousel checks. Did you know that your bank does not even print the checks that they give to you? They use a third-party company like Carousel to fulfill their orders. The bank gets enough of your money as it is. Eliminate the middleman and buy your checks directly from Carousel. You'll save up to 80% compared to the same purchase with your bank. Choose from thousands of designs for your personal or business use, including custom photo checks. Imagine checks with pictures of your kids or grandkids or your pet. Did you have a hobby or a passion? There's a design for everybody. Here's a special offer for you, the WGN radio listeners. Save an additional 25% on your order. Just say, hey, WGN at checkout. WGN at checkout. Order at carouselchecks.com. Use the coupon code WGN. You can also call 708-613-2452. 708-613-2452. Or go to carouselchecks.com. Remember, the promo code is WGN.
Able to get the procedures to help them complete their phases of becoming the other sex or the other gender. What do you say to those people who are seeing this now with this ban in the military? What do you say to transgender America who wants to continue with the change? Maybe some who already had part of the change and want to do the change and are scared because of what's happening now, not for certain. What do you say to transgender America?
As I've said before, and I'll try to make this clear, this was a military decision. This was about military readiness. This was about unit cohesion. This was about resources within the military and nothing more. Guys, I really don't have anything else to add on that topic. As I do, I'll keep you posted. But if those are the only questions we have, I'm going to call it a day. But if we have questions on other topics, I'll be happy to take it.
Sarah, I wanted to finish. Everyone had a second question. I'm sorry, Sarah. On the morale of the cabinet, Anthony Scarmucci this morning on New Day said that the cabinet secretaries need to have tough skin. How is the president working with the cabinet secretaries right now? How does he build their morale after all of this with Sessions and we're hearing things that are coming out of state about Rex Tillerson? How is the president working on their morale?
I think the same way he works with all of us. He empowers us to do our jobs. And I don't think it matters whether you're a cabinet secretary or a low-level staffer. We're here to do a job. He's asked us to do it, and he expects us to get it done. And I've spent a good bit of time with quite a few cabinet secretaries over the last couple of days, and morale is high. Yeah. Stephen.
One more point about transgender service members, not here in this country, but overseas. And there are 18 countries where transgender service members are allowed to serve openly. The UK is one. Australia's another. Israel's a third. The president in his tweet this morning referred to disruptions. What does he mean? And is he concerned that there are disruptions in our allies' militaries in Australia and the UK and Israel? And should we worry about that from a military standpoint?
As I said earlier, this decision was made after extensive discussions with his national security team, and the president decided it was in the best interest of the military to end this Obama policy. I can't speak to anything about another country. Pretty focused on making sure we get good things happening here. Zeke.
Sarah Huckabee Sanders continues to field questions. If that's going on after the news, we'll peek in on that as well. The national security team told the president to do that. But that is interesting because our policy is modeled after those of some of those other countries. They haven't reported problems. So why do we now anticipate them, or have we had some? She demurred.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Got a shark tweet.
Here's John Williams.
That is a tweet. Mm-hmm. About a shark. It's not from a shark. Actually, not thinking about it. It was a text. But anyway, this is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue all the way until 3. Yep, it's a two-hour show. I don't know how he does it. There we go on the... Somebody said, John, your guest on the phone is making me sick. A moment ago, we talked to the guy that caught the biggest Mako shark ever. Or something like that. I thought he was a fun storyteller, and I'm kind of amazed at how you pull a 1,000-pound fish out of the water on a reel. So he was telling us that swell story, and then the person texted, how can he be proud of pulling in that shark? Chasing down a shark with a high-powered boat is not a sport. It's not a sport for me, but clearly it is for some people, and I was kind of fascinated by it, so we put him on the radio. But another texter said, I'm amazed. I believe they meant amazed. That we are celebrating the gratuitous death of this great creature. And I'm surprised with you that you would think this deserves airtime. I'm not a crazy PETA guy, but more so one who feels that all life is sacred. After all, Creator did give us this admonition, thou shalt not kill. There's no but in that statement. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure when God said, thou shalt not kill, he meant, you can't kill fish.
Is there a butt steak in that statement?
Well, I'm just thinking that didn't Jesus take a basket of fish and feed thousands? I wonder what those fish are like. Did the fish get a say in that? No, Jesus was handing them out.
I think they all died of natural causes.
That's the way I prefer to think of my chicken when I buy it at the grocery store. I'd like to think that it died in the arms of loved ones, but I'm not sure that happened.
You mean old and stale?
I know, you don't want that. Maybe a tragic death. It got hit by lightning.
Okay.
But this person said, thou shalt not kill. And I think what he's doing is he's applying it, that scripture, to all living creatures. So you can't step on a bug and you can't kill your neighbor. And you can't have fish either, according to the Bible. According to a listener. By the way, John, I would say, you know, we're talking about the president's tweet, which led to Sarah Huckabee having to answer questions about the president's tweet today on excluding from military service people that identify as transgender. I do believe it was Major Garrett that was pressing her on it. She didn't seem to be enjoying her job much today.
You're going to have to get used to that.
But she said, look, I'm not going to comment beyond the tweet itself. I think it speaks for itself. Part of that conversation went like this.
When the president made the decision yesterday, the Secretary of Defense was immediately informed, as were the rest of the national security team that had been part of this ongoing conversation.
But you can't answer the question of what's going to happen to transgenders who are in the military now. Shouldn't you have been able to answer that basic question with a policy of this magnitude?
Look, I think sometimes you have to make decisions, and once he made a decision, he didn't feel it was necessary to hold that decision, and they're going to work together with the Department of Defense to lawfully implement it.
Okay, one last thing on Sessions, just because this is the baseline question. You said earlier the president was frustrated. Is that
frustrated with Jeff Sessions, and then they went on to talk about morale at the cabinet, and she said morale is high. I'm not sure if she meant she was high or they are high or morale is high, but somebody is high in the Trump administration. The president, of course, could have been just, you know, if I were his advisor, I would be insignificant. But if I were his advisor, I would say, listen, here's what we're going to do. You scored big on health care yesterday. Let's let that happen. Let's just put that on the front burner on Medium and kind of enjoy that instead of complicating things with, we all now have to say Merry Christmas, or Jeff Sessions is a disaster, or transgenders can't serve in the military, stuff like that. But Donald Trump is never satisfied with what happened yesterday. He's ready to tweet again. But I have a couple questions about what happened yesterday, and you may too. Of all the things we've talked about today, this will be the most important, and that includes catching a Mako shark. Joining us again is Mary Agnes Carey, partnerships editor and senior correspondent at Kaiser Health News. I sure appreciate your time when you're able to join us, Mary Agnes. How are you this afternoon?
Doing great, I do.
You sound great, but your phone line doesn't. Can you hear me okay, Mary Agnes?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Not well enough. We're going to call you right back on another line and then begin with this question. What happened yesterday? Because a lot of us aren't exactly sure what specifically happened yesterday and what are the chances now that we are going to get a repealed and replaced Obamacare package. Mary Agnes Carey from Kaiser Health News. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You sound great. What happened yesterday?
Well, yesterday the Senate voted to proceed to the debate on their long-awaited plan from the Republicans to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Last night they had a vote on a replacement bill that included a couple of things that have been heavily watched here. One was an amendment from Ted Cruz that said if an insurer offered plans that were compliant with the Affordable Care Act, they could also have other plans that were not. And there was $100 billion in that bill. Rob Portman, who's a senator from Ohio, wanted that to take people from the Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act and put them into private insurance. Those were two key changes, but it went down. It lost. It did not get enough people to pass it, and it had 9 Republicans vote with the Democrats to defeat it. So that has come into today. There's been much debate about a clean repeal measure. That's been delayed to about 3:30 because of some procedural hurdles. That is also expected not to pass. And so the next move may be what they call a skinny repeal bill, which would simply repeal the individual and employer mandates in the bill and also the medical device tax that's on the medical device industry on those devices. So that may be the next things coming, but it's important for people to know that things can change at any time because this is the Senate.
But you just described a measure by Ted Cruz that didn't pass, but John McCain cast the deciding vote on a measure that did what?
That allowed the Senate to begin debate. It's called the motion to proceed. And so a senator could, in theory, say, as Senator McCain did when he spoke, I don't like the existing bill, and I'm not going to vote for it without changes, but I will permit the Senate to begin debate. It's a procedural motion. And it was very heavily watched because the thought was, would Republicans even have enough of their own votes to begin debate? You might remember last week they didn't.
Oh, sure. Well, that was the way it was being handicapped, that they can't even get this done. But I'm confused. If Republicans control the Senate, even if they don't like the version of the House bill or their own bill, wouldn't they want to have some sort of debate? Why was it thought that this measure wouldn't pass?
Because you had some Republicans like Susan Collins of Maine or Lisa Murkowski of Alaska that really disliked the underlying bill. They dislike it so much they didn't even want the chamber to vote on it. It's kind of a philosophical split, right? You either say, I dislike the bill and I don't even want the chamber to begin to debate it, so I vote against motion to proceed, or you say, I don't like the bill, or maybe you do like the bill. We need to get going as a party, as a Republican party in the Senate. We need to debate this. It was very clear that Democrats would not vote for the motion to proceed. So this is where all those Republican votes were so critical. The Republicans only have 52 Republicans in their majority in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
They lost two, and that's why Vice President Pence had to come in, sit in the presiding chair, and cast that vote that allowed debate to begin.
But that measure, to me, seems to be logical, and yet the way it was pitched, I think, generally in the media, is that it was extraordinary what they were doing here to keep this failed bill alive. It doesn't strike me as being heavy-handed, but I've been told that it was.
Well, I think I would go back to the earlier statement that you made, because your common sense would say, my goodness, if Republicans control the chamber, surely they wouldn't have a problem with their own party beginning debate. But they did, because there's great dissension within the ranks on how to move forward on our ACA repeal, right? Partial repeal, full repeal, replace, don't replace, do it now, do it in 2 years. So it's really a herding cats exercise for Mitch McConnell, who's the Senate Majority Leader.
Yeah, okay. So, but they at least were able to do this, but it then also makes it sound like they're not going to be very successful because they barely even agreed to talk about it. Now they're talking about it. And is it something large or, like you were describing a moment ago, piecemeal? Well, what about whether or not insurance companies can offer non-compliant policies? Is it going to be little components that they'll vote on along the way now?
Well, so far we've had the we just talked about the Cruz Amendment and the Rob Portman money was for Medicaid to go into private insurance. That was part of a more comprehensive bill, right? Now they're on the repeal and replace, complete repeal, rather, of the bill without an immediate replacement. So if we move now to this discussion of the skinny bill, which simply repeals employer mandate, individual mandate, and the medical device tax, it gets more of the piecemeal strategy you're talking about. And then the next thing to watch, tomorrow is something that's predicted to happen tomorrow. It's called the Votorama, where Democrats and Republicans can
They don't really call it the Votorama, do they?
Sure we do.
Promise
Absolutely.
Me. Promise
That's
me
the Washington
that
term.
Tell me promise me that health care is not hanging in the balance of a Votorama.
Any bill under the reconciliation process hits the Votorama at some point. It can go it's a consecutive voting. Amendments are quickly introduced. There's not a lot of debate. They've got to vote on it. But that's where the Democrats are really going to try to put the Republicans on the hot seat. Do you want to fund the cost-sharing subsidies? Try to get them to do certain things to stabilize the markets. Republicans may or may not. Point being, you might get more of this piecemeal strategy tomorrow that you're talking about.
Well, if you pass a measure that eliminates the mandate or the tax, then doesn't the whole thing fall apart anyway? Now you don't have the funding for it ever.
Well, that's what a lot of analysts are saying. They're very concerned about if you got rid of an individual mandate, right? What isn't the incentive for anybody to get in before they get sick? But the thing to remember is if the Senate passed, we'll just call it the skinny amendment, which is sort of the moniker it's gotten here in D.C., if that passes, it's got to go back to the House of Representatives. It's very different than the bill the House of Representatives passed, and some sort of compromise measure would have to come forward because I doubt very much that House Republicans would accept a scaled-back bill.
Maybe that's why Scaramouche, can you do the Fandango? And by the way, that's the only way I'm going to be able to say that guy's name. Maybe that's why he said that this is not going to happen in a hurry. Please don't think it's a panacea or that it's fast. This is going to be laborious. And I suppose you would agree with that, huh, Mary Agnes?
Yeah, I think this could go on for quite a while.
And what's your expectation? But we still have Obamacare, right? And we're going to have Obamacare or not?
Until the Senate or the House were to agree on a measure that repealed the full law or repealed pieces of it, the Affordable Care Act remains in place. But another thing to think about is that the Trump administration administrates this law. They are the ones that oversee it. So, for example, there was some money last week that was taken out of the next open enrollment period for navigators and other folks that help you understand how to enroll. There are many twists and turns that the Trump administration can take in as they oversee the law that could also change it in a variety of ways.
Make it difficult to use, yeah. What were you thinking, Steve?
That actually was my question. You hear about them so-called sabotaging what still exists, and I just wondered if they are doing that or what it is that they could be doing. So maybe the question was just answered.
Well, they could, for example, a lot of discussion about these cost-sharing subsidies that help like 60% of the people on the exchanges with their out-of-pocket costs. They could decide, for example, not to fund them. Or they could say, we will fund them a month at a time, which creates a lot of uncertainty in the market. They might not really enforce this individual mandate as it's on the books. That could create some uncertainty. And we talked about the enrollment funds, for example, and not really going into these. There will be some counties where insurers won't participate. Those numbers are starting to come out now. The Obama administration would go after insurers and say, hey, can you help us out? Will you enroll people here? Will you do business here? I don't think the Trump administration is going to go that route.
All I hear from you is things that aren't going to happen or that are going to be dismantled. Tell me what they want to happen. Tell me something that they are going to do that's going to make health care or health costs better?
The goal is exactly as you say, to reduce premiums, to reduce high out-of-pocket costs, to reduce deductibles. But then that's where that commonality of purpose, how you get there, is there are all these different routes that people agree or disagree on or like or don't like, have differences of opinion. But overall, people would very much like all of us to pay less for our health care, looking at increased premiums, looking at increased out-of-pocket cost, that kind of thing. That is a common purpose, but how you get there is where the divide is.
Well, I have a guess how you get there. You offer crappy insurance that can offer those sorts of economic incentives, but it's not very good insurance. You said that, for instance, they want to be able to allow companies that offer compliant policies, also non-compliant policies. My guess is those would be less expensive. That might be attractive to people who got to have insurance, and then lo and behold, they don't have much coverage, but that would reduce costs, right?
It would reduce costs, and to be fair, throughout my coverage of the Affordable Care Act since it became law in 2010, I've heard numerous people tell me, I don't want all these things, all these coverages that are in the Affordable Care Act. They had plans before that didn't have them. You're a single man, you don't want maternity coverage, for example, or you may not care about pediatric coverage or some of the other services. But again, you, to your point, if you have a broader, more comprehensive policy, it does tend to cost more. But if you get a scaled-back policy, you might find it doesn't cover what you need when you need it.
But right now, we're funding those sorts of things for everybody, right? Men are paying premiums that include coverage for prenatal care, are we not?
That's right. Most of us, yes, through your employer. Most of us get insurance from our employer, or if you are in a ACA plan, yes, you would be covering all.
And is that question in play then? I mean, this sounds like that Bill of Rights, the 10 points that Obamacare wanted to make sure we all had. Are we talking about saying, okay, guys, you can buy a policy that will never include prenatal care because you're never going to need it? Is that something that's in the offing?
It's in the offing, but it was part of, that was Ted Cruz's amendment, part of his plan, and it just got defeated yesterday. So it may have been defeated because it was part of a package that people disliked other provisions, but the very concern about that is if you segment the market that way, you might also segment very healthy people, very sick people.
Oh, you think?
Drives up the premiums for the sick folks.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? I have parents. Trust me. I know what kind of medical expenses 80-year-olds have or their 50-year-old adult children. And it's a lot more than healthy, whip-snap 25-year-olds who don't want to pay high premiums because they don't use much medical coverage. But that's not how it works, kids. We're all in this together, or we're not at all. At least that's the way I thought. You don't have to talk now. I'm just going to let that sit there.
Yeah, you're rolling. Just keep rolling.
Yeah. Well, Joe has a question for you. Hey, Joe, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. My question is just this. Why does the government not force the insurance industry and the medical industry to bring costs down in this country, because we pay so much more than any other country on the planet for the same exact stuff?
Yeah, that's a great question, Joe. What about that?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that has been a question. It's been out there. We don't have any kind of price controls. We don't say that this is all you can charge or, you know, that kind of thing from a government standpoint. I think insurers are trying to get at it with their medical providers, their doctors, and their hospitals, and this kind of thing, in the sense of negotiating discounts. But our editor-in-chief here at Kaiser Health News, Elizabeth Rosenthal, has written a phenomenal book looking at healthcare costs, examining all these factors, and how, you know, even if you've got competition in a marketplace, it doesn't drive down costs. It's just a fascinating question.
We've all talked to her about that. Thank you, Joe. Great question, and we'll spend more time on that another day. But we're kind of missing the boat here, aren't we? That's what we got to do. I mean, that would take care of all these other insurance problems if we just make medical care, pharmaceuticals, for instance, less expensive, right, Mary Agnes?
Well, that is a concern from many Democrats. I've heard some Republicans talk about it. When you look at some of the increases in the prices of generic drugs or a drug like ephedrine that's put in an EpiPen, which is a different delivery device. But why is that so expensive? Traditional drugs and new delivery devices, why do drug makers charge what they charge? I mean, this is one of those areas that actually, of all the things you talk about on healthcare, you might get more bipartisanship on that very issue than the others we've been talking about.
Stay well, Mary Agnes Carey. Thanks for helping us out again this afternoon. We'll call you another day.
Great. Thanks for having me.
As you know, the president tweeted today. We're all talking about that. Sarah Sanders did as well. Please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in the military. Thank you, he tweeted. It might be helpful if we actually defined what a transgender is. A transgender, according to numerous sources I consulted today, and they all pretty much say the same thing. People who identify as transgender are usually people who are born with typical male and female anatomies, but they feel as though they've been born into the wrong body, So you may look like a man, but you feel that you're a female, or the opposite of that. See, by the way, I can hear you in my ears if you are trying to talk to somebody besides just me. So that's maybe the group of people, some of whom are already in the military, that the president thinks should no longer serve because it's either going to be expensive or it's going to be a disruption. Writing about this in Washington Post, Amanda Erickson, a staff writer there, joins us on WGN Radio. Amanda, thanks for taking our call. How are you this afternoon?
Hey, I'm good, thanks. How about you?
Excellent. Was this something that people had been stewing or wondering about? I didn't see this one coming.
No, I think a lot of people are surprised. I mean, there's reports that even the Pentagon isn't quite sure kind of where this came from.
No kidding. You think even the Pentagon that now has to implement this did not know the president was going to tweet that?
I mean, there's reports that say, the Pentagon is referring everybody back to the White House, and it seems like at least some people were kind of caught unaware.
Well, he did say after consulting with his generals and top military advisors, I would like to see some names. Sarah Sanders said today it was, I wrote down exactly the group she said he had been in consult with, but I wonder who advised them on this. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, I don't, and it's not totally clear. The policy of allowing transgender people to serve openly in the military has been studied in the last couple of years under the Obama administration, and it just kind of went into effect in July.
Right, the policy that allows them to. But we also understand that there may be several thousand people. Maybe 6 or 7 is a number I'm reading. Maybe 11. But there are clearly people in the military now who identify as transgender, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really disruptive policy. There's a study out from RAND that says it's probably anywhere from 500 to 4,000 people serving right now. And it doesn't seem like anyone has any guidance about what's going to happen to these people who are, serving right now in the military.
Well, I got a million questions, and I'll bet you don't know an answer to one of them. You ready? How will we know who they are? I mean, and what are you going to tap them on the shoulder and say, hey, are you one of them? If so, you're out. If they want to be in and identify as transgender, it sounds to me a little like don't ask, don't tell.
I'm not an expert on kind of what it feels like to be serving. I think, I wrote an article this morning about sort of other countries and how they've, welcomed transgender service members. And I think one thing that's an issue is when people serving in the military would like to transition, so would like to sort of go from one gender to another gender. There are certain accommodations that have to be made to make sure that those people feel comfortable and that they feel kind of welcome. And so I think that's one area of confusion now in terms of how the U.S. will handle that.
What do you mean by accommodations?
In some places, in some countries, there is, the military will pay for, gender reassignment surgery. In other places, like Australia has a pretty good kind of handbook out about sort of, making sure that there are the right kinds of bathroom facilities for people and the right kinds of, living facilities to make sure that kind of people feel comfortable.
Changing facilities, bathroom facilities, and maybe reassignment surgery that would fall under some sort of military insurance or something like that. I wonder if that's really what's bothering people. I wonder if on the heels of the healthcare debate, he goes, all right, I know, we can cut that cost. We got these transgenders getting surgery on the government's dime. Let's throw them out. I wonder if that's motivating him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you kind of see in that tweet the reference to the cost, I think he's talking specifically about you know the U.S. military or the U.S. kind of armed forces agreeing to pay for gender reassignment surgery. And the estimates about that are, I think, like, you know, between $2 and $8 million a year, which is certainly not no money. But, you know, when you're talking about something like the American military budget, it just, you know, very, very small.
Yeah, okay. This isn't a game changer there, is it? But I'm still kind of confused about how do we identify who the transgender in the military are and what are we going to do with them as a result? Do you have an answer to that?
Well, I think that the issue isn't really about kind of identifying them, but it's about, you know, making people who are right now, you know, serving and, you know, serving, protecting us, you know, feel kind of comfortable and welcome and feel like they can talk about this. And so I think it's maybe less of an issue of, you know, figuring out who's who and more an issue of, you know, saying as you know, unit of the U.S. government, we want you to feel open and to feel, you know, welcome here. And I don't know how this, you know, I don't think there's a lot of kind of clarity about how this policy is going to be, you know, play out. But I think it certainly makes people feel like they don't really know what's going to happen next.
Well, I think it makes them feel like they're not wanted, if that's your point. And maybe now fewer will sign up or some will get out, but maybe some won't. It clearly makes them feel unwanted. But the president was clear about that. After consulting with my experts, please be advised, and that was his national security team and the Secretary of Defense, said Sarah Sanders today, please be advised, I don't know why I'm laughing, this is serious, but his rhetoric sometimes is so utterly unpredictable. Please be advised that the United, because the old Trump would be like, weird, transgenders, queers, gays, out. That would be a Trump tweet. This looks like it was written by a PR team, and clearly they don't. I'll continue. Please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow, meaning you can't even be in, is my read on that, or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. So if, you know, a tweet isn't law, but if the president has the power to implement his thoughts, then it sounds like he doesn't want them serving at all. Now, if somebody at the Pentagon has to execute that, I wonder how they're going to do that.
I think there's a lot of question about what this tweet actually means and how it translates into policy. And I have not seen or read anything that suggests that there has been a lot of kind of consideration of that.
I haven't either. So do you almost wonder maybe, huh? Maybe the president tweeted that, and we've all got our undies in a knot, whichever color they may be, but that, in fact, this may not actually be as big a deal as it feels. Yeah, it's, you know, an unfortunate thing to disparage a group and tell them they're not wanted when they're serving our country, but maybe we aren't going to start throwing them out. Is that your read on it, Amanda?
You know, it's just impossible to say because you know, it reads like a policy, but it doesn't seem like there's been any of the kind of the work that you would usually do, you know, to sort of articulate exactly what you're trying to say and exactly what this looks like. And so it's kind of it's impossible to imagine.
Last thing, does the president does have this authority. He can do something like this, right?
You know, I'm actually not totally sure, like kind of how you would translate this tweet into his policy. He can,
well, if Barack Obama implemented it, I mean, or, you know, authorized it, I suppose the current president can deauthorize it, say, oh, we're not gonna, you guys are out. That's my read on it.
That's my read too, but I'm not totally sure kind of what the mechanisms are.
Because kings can do that. Despots can do it. Dictators can do that. Why can't presidents do that sort of thing too? That's what it looks like. All right. Amanda, anything else that, and you're right. I mean, other countries have been doing this. We've studied other countries, and our plan is rather modeled on some of our biggest military allies, Israel, Canada, Great Britain. I mean, Australia, how did they do it? Did they have any problems? Largely no. Therefore, let's do it that way. And now at the gate, the president says, I don't want that at all. You almost wonder if it's just because it's something with Barack Obama's name on it that he wants it out.
Yeah, and I think that that's a really important point. I mean, RAND, which is a kind of a big think tank here that does a lot of kind of work on military, studied this and talked to a lot of different countries. And there is no evidence that when these countries said you can come and serve and be openly transgender, that there was any kind of disruption. And that's the language that President Trump used in his tweet. And I just haven't seen any evidence of that. 18 countries are doing this right now. They say that they're really, they opened it up and they sort of welcome transgender people to serve openly and that there was no problem, that there is no problem with cohesion.
Yeah, well, I understand why people are confused by the very word transgender and the concept. They don't get it. They're not comfortable with it. They don't want to be around those people, or they just can't fathom that. I'm 57 years old. I understand that. But I also don't think you should be able to discriminate against those people. And I wouldn't even disparage them if they are useful or valuable to us. If that person says, I want to serve your country, I want to be in your military, why would you turn them away if they are capable officers, soldiers, sailors, etc.? Okay, I'm done. I'm going to get off my soapbox. Amanda, if you want to join us again sometime, we'd love to call you up. Keep reporting over there at Washington Post, and we'll reach out to you another day.
Great, thanks. Have a good afternoon.
Yeah, you do too. Amanda Erickson is there. Walter Jacobs celebrates 80 years. I just said Jacobs, didn't I? Jacobson, thank you. 80 years. Steve, do you know, is his birthday exactly today or is it? I know we're celebrating his birthday today. It's tomorrow, isn't it? But we're celebrating his birthday today. I think they're doing it right now.
I think it was at 2 o'clock.
2 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah, it already passed.
The party did, but his birthday is tomorrow, right?
He won't be here tomorrow, so I think they planned it around
that. So he wants to spend his 80th birthday with people other than us.
I'm told the cake was a great success.
I know. Listen, he sits near our office, and so I get a chance to chat with him now and again. And I've never met him before I came back to this radio station a couple months ago. He cannot be a more pleasant, delightful guy.
He is.
He's just been so positive, and I'm so happy that he's still doing what he does so well, loves to do, and he's doing it here. You hear his commentaries here.
And he takes criticism very well. Sometimes I hear one of his, commentaries. I have a couple of ideas to make him better.
It's funny because he came up to me the other day and said, John, do you think that Steve would leave me alone? Is there any way? How do I tactfully put right. that? And I said, I don't know. I can't bug him off
How do
either.
I tell him he doesn't know?
So happy birthday, Walter. And thank you for doing what you do. And congratulations on doing it so well for so long. It's 2:53. Mark Carmen's on the phone line. Speaking of people who do it really well and have been doing it for a while. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Hi, John. Let's not get crazy here. I'm not in the 80-year-old range quite yet, nor have I had an ounce of the success that Bill Walters brought to this town. So there's two things there.
We need to talk about what happened yesterday. Here's the play-by-play of Chris Bryant being tossed out of the game. Elif, if you've got that handy, go ahead and play it from TV.
Strike three.
Balls inside.
And Chris is doing something he rarely does.
Yeah, and if you're Lance Barksdale, if you're Lance Barksdale, you got to be willing to stand in there and take a little bit from Chris Bryant because he never gets after the umpires.
Chris has been ejected from this game.
That's an interesting concept, isn't it? If it's Chris Bryant, who never argues and is a quality player and one of the best players in baseball, if you make a marginal call on him, then it's incumbent upon the umpire to stand there and take it from the player. They were critical of the umpire because Bryant was yelling at him. What was your read on that whole scene, Mark?
Well, multiple levels here, John. Number one, the pitch was 3 feet inside. I mean, it was actually 6 inches, but by baseball terms, that is just really, really inside. To be called a strike. Apparently that pitch is called a strike 2% of the time. And yesterday was one of those times. And then, Chris Bryant, he's just such a gentleman. Golly, gosh darn gee, Lilker, that whole thing. But that was enough to get him tossed. And listen, you can't argue balls and strikes, and he did do it for a while, so I guess on some level it doesn't matter the words. And there was just a little part of me that thought that Bryant actually wanted to get kicked out. He had just fouled a ball off his knee, he had the finger last week. So
struck out three times in that game, too. Yeah, that it wasn't his day.
Right. So I think there was like at least 1% of Bryant that didn't mind getting kicked out. And it was just a crazy game yesterday with John Lackey hitting three White Sox, including Jose Abreu twice. So four times the Sox got hit. It was a wild game yesterday.
So when Bryant gets tossed, what's the consequence for him? He gets a fine then, right?
Yeah, I'm not even sure if there is a fine. He's certainly not getting suspended. So, I mean, he'll be back in the lineup tonight. I don't know. I haven't seen the lineup. If it's out yet, he'll be out in the next half hour or so. So, I mean, Chris Bryant's going to be in there. It's not this is no big deal, clearly. And
yeah.
I mean, Chris Bryant's been kicked out once before in his professional career, and that was in the minors. I don't think this is going to turn into an epidemic.
You know, it's funny because this is the sort of thing, though, that you would think would have happened before the break when everybody was struggling and the team wasn't doing well. Lord, I think I suggested to you, isn't it possible that just as badly as we played in the first half, we could come out in the second half and play really well like we did last year? And lo and behold, we've been doing that, haven't we?
Is this the part of the show where you pump out your chest, John, and just tell everybody, look at what I told everyone was going to happen? You said it, man, and they won 9 of 11. I mean, that's impressive. So you were on. They could turn it around to the level that they did. I think I kind of jumped on your bandwagon once they traded for Jose Quintana, because that obviously has been a huge spark for them, and he got a win over the Cardinals on Sunday night.
Yeah, the boys were giving you grief about that over the weekend, as I recall, sort of calling you out because you weren't so sure about this team. And then we get Quintana, and boy, oh boy, here come the World Series tickets for Mark Carmen, man. You kind of flip-flopped on that a little bit, Mark, no?
Well, I did, John. And see, this is the thing about, you know, doing a talk show. You are allowed to be wrong.
Yep.
And as long as you back up your points with logical,
yep,
factual information, then you're doing the best you can. And the Cubs were terrible in the first half. I didn't really see this flipping. They hadn't pitched well.
Yeah.
But and I still have my doubts here. I mean, John Lackey was not great yesterday, and Kyle Hendricks didn't look exactly spectacular on his return.
All right.
But Quintana's a game changer.
Time's up. I'm going to let you go. I'll listen to you on the weekend, and we'll call you again another day. Thank you, Mark Carmen.
Bye, John.
So they had a cake for Walter Jacobson upstairs. Anna DeVlantis just came in with Roe, which means probably there's no cake left since you were...
I'm a big cake eater. I do like cake. But yeah. I only had my fair share in this case. It was very nice to celebrate Walter.
Yeah. You and Walter having a birthday just a few days apart.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that...
I think that's really something right there, yep. I don't know what that means.
I'm not
something.
Sure either.
I don't know what that means.
It's a journalistic thing. It's the way that the astrological chart looks
so
at
you think
journalism.
All the great journalists are kind of...
Clustered
right in within a week,
yeah,
perhaps.
Walter Cronkite, I believe, his birthday is tomorrow.
I'm sure.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah,
I'm going to look that up now that you said that.
Or maybe it's just the name Walter. Maybe this is the time of year where people name the kids Walter. I don't know.
But it would explain why my birthday is nowhere near this day.
That, are you a December birthday?
Yeah, yes, October.
I understand. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would understand. So we want to wish Walter a very, very happy birthday here.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah,
we
were not for Walter, I probably wouldn't be here.
That's
true. No kidding. You have a connection?
Yeah. I worked with him. I was his producer in the
late
80s, early 90s.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
Here, I used to brag about my Wally Phillips internship, but you worked with Walter back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Walter Jacobson's Perspective.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you kidding? You were involved in that?
Yeah. So that was it.
I don't think people appreciate, if you don't know what Bill Curtis and Walter Jacobson meant to this town when they were on their game as a team. I don't think we've seen... Have we seen something? Carol Marine was a big deal once upon a time.
I think Ron
locally.
And Carol were pretty big in there. Because one of the things that was important, I think, about Bill and Walter was that they were also not just anchoring the news, but, you know, Walter had his perspectives every night. And often our charge was to make sure that at least two of those were investigative pieces a week, not just
oh, really?
Commentary. And so that's when, you know, we'd get the pictures of the city workers asleep in their trucks. One of the great Jim Edwards, who was better known to radio folks as Jake Hartford, who ran that unit for decades. He and his photographer got a guy, literally a Streets of Sand guy, with his feet outside out the window of the truck.
Yeah,
and the guy jumps up and gets that picture of him sleeping in the truck. And then they had to run. And these are not two guys who are known for running. And they had to run away from the guy. So it was, so Walter had a lot of, you know, Walter did that. Bill also did his specials, which became legendary. I mean, mm-hmm. he basically invented A&E, you know, on local television. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, those are two very, very special
legendary guys.
Two legendary people in the Showcase studio now. So you guys are ready to roll here.
John, it's you and Anna, I agree. Two legendary people. Thank you very much.
Two legendary people, none of them here in the studio right now.
No, that's right. That's a better way to put it. All right. Thank you, John.